This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Corvers there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this very special edition of Two Birds on a Bat, your St. Louis Cardinals fan podcast. I know it's Wednesday, probably shocking. Everybody's used to us putting out a show on Mondays and Thursdays. Wanted to do a special edition today, though, because I've been following a guy on Twitter for quite some time now. Well, I think it's a guy. Now I know it is a guy. So it was kind of a character, I guess, if you will. And a lot of people follow him, and like I said, now I can say it's him because I've had the opportunity to meet him, and as will you. Interested to learn more about something that a lot of fans have made a spirited debate with our show, whether you're for or against, really doesn't matter. But the sabermetrics and the analytics that come along now with the game of baseball, it's hand in hand. There's no doubt about it. It's kind of all you hear anymore, and as guys like myself and Steve Flowers, who's normally in studio with me, and of course everybody's favorite Benji Molina, knows, we talk on here, and while the analytics seem to be overtaking the game of baseball, there's still a faction of people that sometimes have a hard time understanding, I guess would be a good word, of just how those analytics are supposed to play into the actual playing of the game. So I've been interested in learning more about it because I've always said that, you know, you can be ignorant and just say, look, I don't understand this, and nor do I want to understand it. For me, it's more, and again, I like to play devil's advocate. Everybody knows that. But the reality of it is, for me, I believe that there's a fine line in there to where I think you need a little bit of everything. Like, I think you need some common sense. I think numbers help you understand. I understand that people want to look at numbers as giving you the best opportunity, but I also think there's a human element. And I think that's where the job of the manager becomes really hard because, I mean, it's almost like playing blackjack. Do you always play by these rules or do you use your gut sometimes? And how does this work? Just because you used your gut and you won, was it right? Or just because you played by the numbers and lost, you walk away from the table going, well, I played by the numbers, but I'm also walking away $1,000 down. I wish I wouldn't have done that. So hindsight's always 20/20. It's always really easy after the fact to say you should have done this or not done this. That's where I have the biggest problem with all of this, because after the fact, it's real easy to say, hey, should have done this or shouldn't have done this, when the reality of it is, you know, winning, unfortunately, is what the game's all about. Like, you got to find a way to win, and you can't tell me that there haven't been teams that have defied numbers and won, and there's teams that despite the numbers have lost. So again, I understand the whole odds and all that kind of stuff, but you know, at the end of the day, I get it, and I'm just happy to have the opportunity to have a gentleman on that I think can help me and everybody else understand it a little bit while also bringing some levity to the situation and some reality. Before we go to him and I introduce him, and all of you are going to know who he is because you enjoy his stuff as much as I do, I want to remind everybody to make sure you check us out at twobirdsonabat.com. It's our website. It's where you can find today's episode. You can find back episodes. And going forward, the new episodes. But for instances like today, if you were subscribed to the podcast, you'd get a notification like, hey, there's a new show out. It's absolutely free. You simply click subscribe to the podcast. Very easy thing to do. Asking you to follow us on all of our social media outlets. Find us on Twitter. We are at Birds on a Bat Show. Find us on Facebook simply by typing in Two Birds on a Bat. We also have a Facebook group called Birds on a Bat. We'd like you guys to be a part of those as well. Instagram, Two Birds on a Bat Show. Again, social media is a great way for everybody to be a part of the Cardinal community. We're very proud to be partnered up with some of the amazing Facebook pages that are out there. Arch City Sports, a great one that now is on board with us. Chris Lawless has been with us from the beginning with Cardinal Nation, Cardinals 24/7, Cardinal Freaks. Of course, everybody's favorite, Nate McHenry with his RallySquirrel.com page. Obviously, everybody remembers the Rally Squirrel, kind of how it came to be, and he's really parlayed that into a massive page. St. Louis Cardinals Fans Unite's another good one we're very proud to be a part of. Just really great community of Cardinal Facebook groups that allow everybody to be a part of the community. So really excited about that. And last but not least, of course, special thanks, as always, to lineupmedia.fm and everything they do. They take your entertainment time very seriously. They're the fastest-growing podcast company on the planet. If you want to get involved, check them out, lineupmedia.fm. I'm sure you'll find another podcast besides this one that you'll enjoy dedicating your time to each and every week. Let's move forward now. As like I said, I think most people are going to be interested to hear this only because, again, it comes across sometimes as us being standoffish with numbers. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, more than we admittedly are probably a little bit uneducated when it comes to that. But at the same time, I would also say that you're not going to ever convince any of us in this room that there doesn't have to be a human element involved as well. So while I think there's a fine line there, I will wait and reserve my statement because I heard somebody describe how they look at this the other day, and he was an awful good baseball guy. I think I'm in that ballpark with him. So, but I want to have this guy on when I say that because I want him to be able to tell me why I either am onto something or I'm way off. So without waiting any longer, let's welcome in a guy that all of you, well, most of you, I'm sure, and if you're not, you should be following on Twitter. Again, I'm going to call him a character because it's actually funny. I had said to him, should I say your name or should we not break character? And he said, I think everybody enjoys the character, so let's just stay right there. So that's what he'll be referred to on here. Going forward, let's welcome in the Twitter account and the man himself, at Mo's Algorithm. How are you, sir?
Hey, thanks for having me on the show today.
Hey, I'm really excited about this. I've been working on trying to find the right person to have on to talk a little bit about analytics, sabermetrics, things like that. It's not going to do any good to have anybody on here that we're going to argue with all the time. Needs to be a good back and forth. I've been following your stuff on Twitter for a long time, and I really enjoy it. And I know that we've had a lot of back and forth on Twitter, so I'm excited about this. I don't know if you are, but I know I am.
Yeah, no, I am. I really appreciate it. Should be a lot of fun.
Well, you've listened to the show, I know, and you guys have. You guys that listen to the show know we're not. I'm not going to say standoffish, but we're obviously more on the old school side. But at the same time, I think there's also an understanding that numbers are obviously involved in the game of baseball. They tell a story kind of who you are. The game of baseball has changed in that there's so many underlying numbers now, I guess, is a term that's used. And those underlying numbers sometimes tell a little bit of a different story. I've said numerous times that sometimes I feel like those numbers are designed to tell me that a guy that isn't very good is better than I think he is. And they're also designed sometimes to tell me that a guy that I think is pretty good actually isn't very good. Can you kind of explain to me why I feel that way?
Well, there's a lot of different things that go into it, but the main thing is coming up with a way to make a league average, with certain numbers. For instance, weighted runs created, league average is 100, So if you're at 100, you're a league average hitter, according to the metrics. So it really gives you an opportunity to then judge players based on that scale as to whether or not they're a good hitter or not. Some people view guys as good hitters who, when you really dig into the numbers, they're not that good, but they see him making big hits every now and then, and they get the perception that they're good hitters. Kyle Schwarber would be one of them, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that one because it seems like we, as fans, sometimes when guys do big things, we tend to give them more of a break when they're not doing so well. So I get that. I can understand that part of it. What I'm interested in as we move forward, especially before we kind of, and again, I'm going to tell our listeners what the reason for the special edition today is again, I do follow you and I find you interesting. You're the one guy that I follow that I understand that is heavy into the analytics, and I appreciate where you go with your stuff. It's very open. It's not forced. It's like, hey, listen, you know, here's the deal. Here's the story. And that's why I like it. And I want to get smarter about it if I can. I don't know if I can. We're going to find out. But you come up with a top 50 list. And when I saw that you were doing this, I was interested to see yours because I thought, you know, if there's going to be some thought behind it. And again, to your credit, you and I talked a little bit off air that this was an undertaking that wound up being a little bit bigger to bite off than you thought originally, but I'm glad you did it. So it really sparked my idea of having you on as a guest today, because ultimately at the end of the day, what I'd like to do is, the first thing I want to do is just kind of continue a little bit with who you are as far as like how this happened for you, like where you came up with some of the love for the analytics part, and then I want you to tell me how you came up with this list. So first off, let's start with how'd you develop the Moe's algorithm character and really what's the driving force behind it?
I fell in love with analytics when I discovered Billy Beane. You'll have a lot of people that refer back to him when it comes to Moneyball. You know, I read the book, see the movie. I understand what they were trying to do. And every day I try to learn more as to what baseball analytics is and how teams have evolved from that 2002 season to where they are now, you know. So that's where my love of analytics and looking at baseball differently really started.
The whole character thing of Moe's algorithm is, are you a Mosaic fan, or was it just, did you find the whole bow tie and the glasses and the sweater just more of an analytical look?
So this may be an unpopular take. I am a huge John Mosaic fan. I think he is arguably the best baseball executive currently employed right now. Some may disagree with that because he is very calculated and hesitant in making some decisions. And, you know, the last two seasons, they haven't been quite as aggressive as some fans have wanted, including myself. But I always feel that there's a reason behind his madness, and his success speaks volumes. You know, when you take over as GM and have not had a single losing season in 10 years, that says a lot about the job you do. And I appreciate the guy. So yeah, it's kind of a spoof to say, you know, Moe's algorithm, he uses his algorithm all the time to make decisions and whatnot. So that's kind of where I got the name.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. 'Cause like I said, I assumed it was either a play on it or a tribute. It sounds like it's kind of both. So that's good. I am enjoying that. As we start looking a little bit at these analytics, I guess could you give us is it even possible to give us a 5-minute 101 on the analytics and basically what they can tell us?
The first thing they're going to tell you is, like I said, the best thing is that it gives you that league average. And that's the most important part about it, is it's going to set a baseline as to whether or not you are above average, at league average, or below average. And with that comes, that's where salaries come in. That's where WAR comes in. That's where stuff like that comes in to determine how good of an overall player you really are. Like I said, I go back to weighted runs created and OPS plus. Those are typically some of the easier ones for people to learn because there's a formula that determines based on how you've performed with your plate appearances. They calculate that up to come up with your weighted runs created or your OPS plus. And then you get a league average of 100. And, you know, players like Mike Trout, for instance, this year had a 187 OPS plus. That is a fascinating number. It really is. That is as about as elite as you can get. Where someone like Randall Grichuk was, you know, somewhere around 90. So you can tell he's 10% below league average, while Mike Trout was 87% above league average. So that kind of gives you that span of just how good some players are compared to others.
Okay, well, I'm interested to learn more about that, and we're actually going to talk about that towards the end. What I want to get to now is the meat of our conversation, and that is your top 50 list. The thing that intrigues me about it is, free agency is always big news in baseball. It's an opportunity for teams that have not been good to feel like they can get better in a quick hurry, which I don't know that that's necessarily true. That's a topic. That's another topic for another discussion. But it is an opportunity for a team to get involved. If you're a team like, let's say, if you're a championship caliber team, like, you know, let's talk about like a team that, like the Dodgers or the Cubs that came close but didn't make it. It's an opportunity then for to say, hey, look, we were one piece away, or we could do that. If you're the Cardinals that didn't make the playoffs, you could say this is an opportunity for us to address real issues. If you're a team that has set yourself up and now you have some young players, maybe you need that veteran. So really it's an opportunity for all teams in some way, shape, or form to change the look of their club rather easily if you consider throwing money at a problem easy. There are some intriguing names on here. Our St. Louis Cardinals kind of fit into that mode of we could use some established players versus some what I would call younger maybe guys that you're not completely sure what you have, or guys that are, to your point, average or a little bit below average, in my opinion. So the list really intrigued me. Now, obviously, there's other things involved in this, like trades, which that's, again, a whole other conversation. But for the sake of this argument, you put together this awesome list. I'm going to let you go ahead and start and just say, is there anybody on this list that you'd like to talk about first that you think is probably an intriguing guy for the Cardinals, and why?
The first guy for the Cardinals that I can come up with would be Brandon Morrow. You know, he spent last season with the Dodgers, and we saw in the playoffs how dominating he can be. And, you know, with that, I don't see the Cardinals signing Greg Holland or Wade Davis. I personally just don't see them dumping $16, $17 million a year into one arm. When you can get, you know, I have them signing Brandon Morrow, who he's going to be 33. He's had a checkered injury history, but he has been healthy over the last season and a half. You know, I have him at, 3 years for $27 million. That's $9 million a year. It's just about $1.5 million more than where they signed Brett Cecil. You know, and then you go down to Juan Nicasio. You know, he's 31. He spent, you know, the months here and looked fantastic. I have him with the Cardinals at 3 years, $18 million. So there you have two arms who can be dominating at any point during the season. So it really doesn't matter who's labeled the closer. You have two arms that you can spend $15 million a year on that can get you six outs in a game, or you can spend, you know, $16, $17 million a year on aging, overused closers in Holland and Davis for $16, $17 million a year. To me, it doesn't make sense. It makes more sense to do it this way. I think a lot of teams like the Dodgers, yes, they have Kenley Jansen, but behind him, they've shown that stacking up, good, reliable arms behind their closer is the way to go. So I think if the Cardinals can do that with Juan Nicasio and Brandon Morrow, they got two guys in the back end of the bullpen that can close out games. And let's not forget Tyler Lyons. Tyler Lyons was dominant this summer. So, him from the left side and the other two from the right side, I think they really close up the back end of that bullpen signing those two guys.
Okay, let's get into this now. Why those two guys, though? Is it just familiarity as far as Nicasio is concerned? Is it the fact that Morrow had a great season? Are there some underlying numbers that I'm unaware of to why you believe? And again, this is where I'm going to go with this, okay? I'm with you. Like, if you told me that Brandon Morrow and Juan Nicasio were going to be those back-end guys, I'm down. Here's my issue. Are we 100% sure that either one of those guys can get outs in the ninth inning up a run or two? Because I don't have anything for you other than it seems like a lot of guys can get outs in the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning, but when you put them in the ninth inning, they just can't get it done. It's not a problem just for the Cardinals. It's a problem across baseball. Some guys just can't do it. So how do we know that one of these guys can get outs in the seventh and eighth inning but can also get outs in the ninth? Because while Nicasio was fine here in September, the guy's only – prior to coming here, he only had five career saves.
Yeah, I don't think right now there's just not really a way to measure the ninth inning per se to say that a guy can or can't do it. I, being of the analytics side, do not really agree with the save statistic. I think it's somewhat silly in the sense that, you know, you can save a game in the sixth inning.
No, I would agree with that.
And you can breathe. What's that?
I agree with that 100%, but yet you have to, I mean, you can't deny the fact that it seems odd that some guys, when given the opportunity, for some reason, all of a sudden can't do it.
Yeah, and that goes to, like, you know, that goes to your guys' side of the argument about the mental side of it, you know, that there's more than just numbers. And I would agree, you know, there is sometimes there's stuff in guys' heads that they can't really explain, that they don't want to be out there at that particular moment. I think with Nicasio, he showed he could do it this in September in the middle of a race, you know, up until the final week or so they were in it. So there was definite pressure there for him to get the job done, and he did it. The other thing I like about both of them is their strikeout rate. Both of them had, you know, at least one strikeout per inning this season, while Nicasio was with the Cardinals and Morrow with the Dodgers. When you can get that, when you can get a strikeout and you only really need to get two outs, I think that really helps. So someone like Kinsler, who pitched for the Twins and then was traded to the Nationals, not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of closers who can't strike guys out. You're asking for trouble, and you're asking your defense to do a lot more than they should have to.
I would agree. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I like Nicasio. I actually, like, it's funny. I always lay the thing out because I believe that sometimes you have to look at your situation too. My problem is this, and I'm not saying I'm for or against anything. I think the Cardinals are in a tough spot here because I'm with you. If you told me that this is what we were going to do about our bullpen, I would be in. My problem is I'm not sure they can do this, and let me tell you why. I believe in my heart that the only reason Nicasio didn't get more save opportunities is because he played for a team that, frankly, while the last couple years that he's made a name for himself in the bullpen, they've had closers. So he hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities to close games. So maybe it's not that we didn't know if he could or couldn't do it. He just didn't get those opportunities. Now, that being said, on the flip side, can the Cardinals, who have really struggled with this closer thing, go into a season and look at their fans and say, basically, we went out and got a couple of seventh and eighth inning guys, and we're going to hope one of them can close games? Can they really do that?
Well, that's a matter of whether or not they play smoke and mirrors elsewhere, you know. And I say that with the big bat. You know, you hear Mo say 1 and 1A is the big bat and the back end of the bullpen, right?
Right.
If you trade for a guy like Stanton, and then you know your quiet signings of Morrow and Nicasio are your bullpen solutions, I don't think you get much backlash.
I'm in.
I think there's enough excitement that they'll go, oh, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. Nicasio was great for us in September, you know. So now, if they don't get that big bat, you're already going to have fans upset about that. And then you do, you know, this trickery with the bullpen where you're signing, you know, Morrow and Nicasio and not signing one of the big names. Then it's going to revert back to the DeWitt is cheap and Mo doesn't know what he's doing and this season will suck, you know, according to a lot of fans. And I can't say I blame them for thinking that way, but with the way bullpens are changing and the way managers are using them, I think quantity over necessarily quality is the way to go.
Okay, so that being said, I want to move on from that because, and I'm gonna take a slight right, and then we're going to come back to the main drag here. And the reason I'm going to do that is because on your top 50 list, those are the only two players that you have the Cardinals signing as free agents this year. And you'll see where I'm going with this. So my assumption is the reason that those are the only two players you have the Cardinals signing from the free agent list, from the top 50 anyway, the reason you're doing that is because I think you, like me, believe in your heart that Giancarlo Stanton is a perfect storm for the St. Louis Cardinals. Do you want to tell our listeners why you think he makes perfect sense for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I can. The main reason he makes so much sense is he fits every single need that they have, right? So right field has been a rotating door for years. They could fill that void with a guy. And this is something that bothered me yesterday. I saw a lot of people referring to Giancarlo Stanton as some DH, right? This guy is a great outfielder. He has great UZR metrics. He has a cannon of an arm. The guy is going to be able to play the outfield for a long time. This is not Matt Holliday. Okay. And that's no slight at Matt Holliday, but he was never a very good outfielder. But Giancarlo Stanton is a good outfielder, and he can get outs with that arm. So Don't refer to him as a DH. that's just not true. The other side of it, you know, they need the big bat in the middle of the order. I've seen some people say, you know, have him bat second, third, fourth, wherever. But you put guys like Pham and Carpenter and Dex in front of that kind of bat, you're going to see their numbers explode because pitchers don't want to face Stanton with those runners, with those guys on base. So it really changes the entire complexity of that offense. Plus, you're pushing power hitters like DeJong and Jurco even further down the lineup, strengthening it and lengthening it, make it even better. And the other side of this is more than baseball. This goes back to Bill DeWitt. Stanton solves more problems than just lineup cards. I'll take a left turn here with Christian Yelich. I like Christian Yelich. He's a great player. I draft him every year in fantasy baseball. He's not the solution. I'm not buying a ticket to Busch Stadium to see Christian Yelich play baseball. That's just me. And I think a lot of fans would agree that he's a good player, but I'm not going to go buy a ticket deliberately just to see him. People are going to buy tickets to see Giancarlo Stanton. It's the same when McGuire put on his shows in batting practice. Stanton does the same thing. You will have batting practice full of people waiting to catch Stanton balls. You're going to sell Stanton jerseys, Stanton bobbleheads. He will be the new Albert. And that type of revenue coming in from just having a player like that more than makes up for his contract. So they can say what they want about the contract and how they don't want to pay it and whatnot. Having that centerpiece, that franchise-type player, brings in more money because of the merchandise and the extra tickets and whatnot that he will sell. So he solves problems all across the board that they're missing. And I think, you know, especially with their new TV deal, that only helps people turn the TV on. Because I'll admit, I love the Cardinals. They're not all that exciting to turn the TV on, even when they're winning games. They're kind of boring. Stanton changes that. Stanton boosts ratings. So I don't see how there's a way they don't do everything in their power to make this happen. Now, the caveat to that is he can nix the whole thing. And that's where the Cardinals have no control, you know, and that's where it's up to him. But the Cardinals end of it, they've got to do everything possible to make that happen, to fix some problems.
Well, I want to jump in here and say that you and I could not be any more lockstep in how we feel about this entire situation. Okay. The only thing that you didn't say, like you didn't get into, which I'm sure you could, because again, you're a very intelligent guy. The only thing you didn't cover is as far as the perfect storm goes, you covered a lot of the needs. They also have the ability to do it. See, that's the thing. We have the money, but we also have the prospects. And while trading prospects can hurt, the Cardinals are in a situation where they have to do something with these prospects. You can't have them all because they have blocked some of these prospects. So they've got to make some moves. They have to do something. And while I can appreciate the fact that people love prospects, the reality of it is not very few prospects turn out to be exactly what you think they're going to be. They really do. I mean, I know you look at them and you think, well, this guy hit in the minors, he's going to hit. It just doesn't work that way, folks. And it especially doesn't work that way for pitchers. So assuming, okay, that all these pitchers, okay, are gonna be what you think they are because they pitched well in the minors is crazy. Now, our hope is that they do. But here's where I'm going with this. You said that ultimately at the end of the day, Giancarlo Stanton can nix it. And yes, you are right. Where I think the Cardinals do have a little bit more in control of that than you would give them credit for, maybe, or anybody would, is, and this is where my crazy theories come in, right, is this. I think they actually do, and this is why. The only, like a lot of people have said, oh, he said he won't go here and he won't go here. That's not what he said, okay? What he is, I'm sure, in having just an open conversation, he has probably said, well, sure, I'd love to play in L.A. or San Francisco. Who wouldn't? And I've said 1,000 times over, who wouldn't? All I've said is that I guarantee you what he has said is I don't want to be part of a rebuild. And he has said I don't want to be part of a rebuild here in Miami. So basically, I guarantee you he's in a situation where he understands he's getting moved. Now, if Miami comes to him and says, look, I understand you'd like to go to LA or you'd like to go to San Francisco, but we can't make a deal with them. they're not giving us anything to make it worth our while to trade you. We're better off holding on to you. But you can go to St. Louis because they have the players and are willing to take this amount of money, blah, blah, blah. I have a hard time believing he'd say no. Now, he might. But just because a guy says, well, yeah, man, I'd love to be in L.A. Well, who wouldn't? Number one, they've shown you that they'll overspend, so you probably never have to worry about that being an issue. It's L.A., right? They are pretty good. So I can understand a guy saying, I would like to be in L.A. I just have a hard time believing that if the Miami Marlins came to him and said, look, our deal's with the Cardinals. Will you accept this? I have a hard time believing he'd say no. Now, he may even say, are you sure you can't work out something with L.A. or San Francisco? Where I think the Cardinals come into play is that I think they have to make the deal so good that Miami says, no, we really can't. I mean, our deal's with the Cardinals. Now, if we want to go to them and say, we think we've got your back against the wall, because what do we know? We know San Francisco's minor league system isn't good at all, right? You could probably help a little more with L.A.'s, but I know I don't think it's as good as ours. L.A. is probably going to want them to eat more money because while they're willing to spend money, they are way over already and are paying a ton of money on the luxury tax. So you can't tell me that we're not in the perfect storm to get Stanton.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you there. I've said that a variety of times on Twitter to some folks. You know, when it comes down to the ultimatum of Miami or St. Louis, he's not staying in Miami. He because they're going to tear that thing down, and he's going to be standing there with a bunch of guys he doesn't want to play with. You know, another thing I think the Cardinals can do, and this is an interesting twist, he is very, very close with Christian Yelich and D. Gordon. Very close. So I don't know you can get all three. I think that's probably unrealistic due to money and roster construction. But if you were to work out a deal, I mean, they want to get rid of one of those guys too. If you can find a way to include one of those guys, it makes it a lot easier for the Marlins to say, hey, you know, D's going too. You know, and he doesn't have a no-trade clause. So you can go play with D in St. Louis or you can stay here in Miami because we got nothing with the Dodgers. I don't think the Dodgers are interested in Stanton. I don't. They are working so hard to get under the luxury tax because the new CBA kills these teams that go over the luxury tax. You know, Dave Dombrowski came out yesterday for the Red Sox and said, I have no intentions of being under the luxury tax. Well, that's nice for his owner, but the new ownership that took over the Dodgers did not want that. And they've done everything they can to start shedding payroll while staying competitive. You know, and they're going to spend right at the limit, but adding Stanton shoots them just back over it. And it's the same with the Giants. You know, the Giants are very close, and if they add a contract like Stanton, they're going to be over it. And the new CBA is designed to stop some of these teams, or at least truly deter them from going over that luxury tax threshold. So I don't think the Giants or the Dodgers have a whole lot to stand on when it comes to what the Cardinals can offer, what the Cardinals have available to them. So that's why, yeah, I agree with you. It's a perfect storm. And I believe through and through that Giancarlo Stanton will be a Cardinal.
All right, so now I'm going to really put you on the spot. You've got to tell me what the deal looks like.
Are we just going Stanton?
Yep.
Just Stanton. Stanton, straight up.
Yep, just Stanton.
I said the last few days, I think it looks like something like Jack Flaherty, Jordan Hicks, and an outfielder. And the Cardinals are going to take on all the money up until the opt-out. And then after that, I think the Marlins kick in about 20%. You know, if he doesn't opt out, which there's debate on whether or not he will or not. It's going to depend on what Machado and Harper and stuff, what they get, and how he performs over the next 3 years. You know, he has had some injuries, so if he misses a season and a half or something, he's not going to be able to opt out. So I think right now, you know, Peter Gammons reported the Cardinals have offered, you know, one of their top pitching prospects. And from everything I read on Twitter about folks that go to Springfield games and Memphis games and stuff, Miami stalked Jordan Hicks. They were at every one of his starts. The Cardinals came out the other day and said that that's one of the guys they don't want to trade. So I think that's more leverage. But ultimately, I think it comes down to Flaherty, Hicks, and an outfielder. And by outfielder, I mean Piscotty, Sierra, or Bader. I don't think Grichuk really does anything for Miami. And personally, I think Grichuk is the best option for a fourth outfielder because he can play all three spots. He provides power off the bench. and he's cheap. So in that aspect, I don't think it would be Grichuk. I think it would be one of those other three.
Well, I like it. The one thing that you said that I think is the key to the whole thing is this. I think if you're Miami, you're sitting there going, okay, here's the deal. We get these young players. We get him out of here. And there's a real chance we won't pay anything. Because if he opts out, we don't owe anything.
Yeah.
But if he opts in, then we're going to cover it. I like, see, there's a twist in it that if the Cardinals did that, see, I think that's something they can offer. I think that's a great idea. I haven't thought about that. That's a really good deal.
And it doesn't hurt any, like, yes, trading Flaherty and Hicks on the surface, people will view it as it hurting. It doesn't hurt. I mean, they got Hudson and Gomber and more guys behind them that are ready to come up. They cannot find spots, even in the bullpen, for all 10, 11, 12 of these guys.
That's right.
I mean, the other day I was talking to someone, this was it seven, like 13 or 14 of their top 16 prospects are pitchers and outfielders. You can only have five guys in a rotation. You only have three guys in the outfield. So it doesn't matter how good they are. Eventually, you got to do something with them, and you might as well package some of them together to get elite talent, which is something the Cardinals lack to begin with.
Okay, so last thing on Stanton before we get back to your list, because I know you want to get back to that. Are there any players that if Miami said, nope, not Flaherty, not Piscotty, we want this guy and this guy. Are there any players that you're saying no to?
No. And I know people are going to bring up Reyes, and I understand that. I do. But here's where I go with that. You got a disgruntled group of people about Carlos Martinez, right? You've seen it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Carlos Martinez with his Alex Reyes, not too long ago. You know, the White Sox tried getting Carlos Martinez multiple times. One time it was for Alexei Ramirez. The other time it was for whatever. Okay. And everyone says, no, we're not trading Carlos Martinez. No, he's an ace. Not going to happen. What are you going to do if Reyes turns into exactly what Martinez right now? Which I love Carlos Martinez. I think he's a fantastic pitcher. I think he's 26 years old and only going to get better. But he's been in the league now for, what, 4 or 5 years? And people are now disgruntled because he's not Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
So what does it hurt you trading Reyes?
Would you trade Martinez?
You have other guys. What's that?
Would you trade Martinez? If they said we want Carlos Martinez?
No, I can't do that. And the reason I can't do that is because the Cardinals already don't have enough innings for next year's pitching staff.
All right.
They already lack the amount of guys that can eat up those innings.
Okay.
So it's not really because of his talent. It's because he's one of the only guys that can turn in 180 innings next year.
I'm going to tell you that
so
I would
trade Reyes before Martinez.
But I'm going to tell you I would, and let me tell you why. Do you know the most innings the Houston Astros starter threw this year was 150? It was Mike Fiers.
Yeah, I would believe that. They had a lot of injuries.
Well, because what I'm saying is if it took Carlos Martinez to get it done, I would do it, and here's why. No, I wouldn't trade him and Reyes, or I wouldn't trade him and somebody. If they wanted established Carlos Martinez, I would say, well, then you're just getting Martinez and the outfielder, is what I would say.
Yep.
Because then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and go into this thing, but I'm going to go into it and say, I know that at some juncture during the year, I'm going to shut these guys down for a couple weeks and bring up spot start guys. That's what I'm going to do. Because I'm telling you, I think you can do that. Now, is that a great recipe? I don't know. Sure worked out okay for Houston. Now, that being said, I think that also gives you an opportunity to see what you got. Now, again, I'm all in on getting the guy because I think he's that big. Now, some people I've seen say, well, you know, how did that work out when McGuire was here? That didn't translate into this, didn't translate into that. I've said 1,000 times over, you can't just go get Stanton. You got to go get the two guys you mentioned. You got to go fix the bullpen too. But I'm telling you this, Stanton makes a lot of guys around you that you have that are pretty young. You've got some young players that can play a little bit here. And he makes them a lot better, a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get off Stanton because I want to get back to your list. And then I have one more Cardinal question for you that I want you to – after we talk about your list a little bit, I'm going to finish up with a guy on the Cardinals that had a great season, and I want you to tell me why he's going to have another one next year, and maybe your numbers can help us because I want to believe he's going to be what we think he is. Okay, so I want to look at your list here. A couple things that interest me. Number one, you have Jake Arrieta going to the Braves. Is there any particular reason?
Yeah, and that one may catch people by surprise. I'm glad you caught that one. Last winter, the Braves were really, really in on Chris Sale. They virtually came in second to the Red Sox in terms of acquiring Chris Sale. The Braves want to compete. I think they're ready. You know, that offense is pretty good with Albies and Freeman and Swanson. They still have Matt Kemp. So if he can stay healthy, I think the Braves are ready to compete. Can they compete with the Nationals? Probably not. Could they compete for a wild card? Maybe. And I think Jake Arrieta goes a long way into helping with that. Now, I'm not a huge Jake Arrieta fan. I'm not interested in him coming to St. Louis. But at the 4 years, $100 million, I think that they can get another good year or two out of him and really start to compete and develop some of their young pitching. And he also takes that leadership role that they lost with R.A. Dickey. So Dickey sounds like he might retire, might play at a place or two. He hasn't really decided. They have a good set of young pitchers that I think Jake Arrieta could put at the top of that rotation with Julio Teheran and Mike Fulton-Everett and those guys. I think that they would be good enough to compete for a wild card. And they've been looking for that ace. They missed out on Sale. I don't think they're going to jump into the Yu Darvish sweepstakes. So Jake Arrieta, I think, really fits that mold for them.
And I'm jumping around here, obviously, to players that I find interesting. So you have Yu Darvish actually going back to the Rangers at 6 years and 150. Is that purely familiarity? And I only say that because I kind of wondered if he lost some money this postseason.
Yeah, and that's a fair argument. I think if you listen to Carlos Beltran at the end of the World Series, he tried not to say it, but he did say it, that he was tipping pitches. So, but if you look at what he did against the Nationals and the Cubs, he was dominant. He just got pulled early, right? Especially that Cubs start. They let him bat with the bases loaded, and then they pull him the next inning anyway, even though he was pitching just fine. So I think the Nationals and Cubs showed what he really can do. I think there was something the Dodgers figured out against him in the World Series. I'm sorry, the Astros figured out against him in the World Series, much like the Cardinals have something on Kershaw. You know, all it takes is one little movement, one little flicker, and guys kind of figure out what you're throwing. So I don't think he cost himself any money this year. I think he's the most dominant pitcher in the free agency class this year. I think the Rangers knew what they had in him when they traded him. I think he has a desire to go back to Texas. I've said that the Cardinals should sign him. I don't think they will because they're going to be spending their money on Stanton. But I think him coming to St. Louis with his old pitching coach, Mike Maddux, would really send the Cardinals into a group of teams that would really compete for a World Series. But I don't see that happening. I see him going back to Texas because they need someone around Cole Hamels to compete. And Texas isn't a team that's going to tear down and rebuild. They're going to spend money. They're going to throw money at it. And I think they do that with Darvish.
I'm going to jump to a guy that obviously we're very familiar with here and people are curious about. A lot of people would like to see the Cardinals bring him back, and that's Lance Lynn. You have him going to the Orioles, 4 years, $76 million. I'm going to tell you that right off the bat, I think you're low there. I think he gets a five-year deal, closer to that $90 million, $100 million range. What's your thoughts on that, on him going to the Orioles?
So all summer long on Twitter, I had him going to the Milwaukee Brewers. I saw a fit. I saw a need with the Brewers for that ace-type pitcher, someone a little better than Chase Anderson. But, you know, when you look at their system, they got a great farm. They got a lot of young arms. Their rotation's pretty full the way it is right now. So I don't know that they invest that kind of money into someone like Lance Lynn. I think they probably go with what they've got and hold out for the 2018 class of pitchers and maybe look for their ace-type pitcher there because the Brewers got a lot of money to spend. People forget back when in the Prince Fielder days, you know, when they were in the NLCS in 2011, that was a $100 million payroll. And this past year, they were down to like 30-something million. So the Brewers have a lot of money to spend, and they have a very flush farm system ready to compete with the Cubs and Cardinals. So people need to take the Brewers seriously. The reason I have them going to Baltimore is – you know, their owner is kind of like Mike Ilitch of the Tigers, you know, the late Mike Ilitch. He's going to throw money at anything to try and compete, especially in the last year of the Manny Machado, Adam Jones tandem. Those two go into free agency next year, obviously. That rotation was the worst in baseball last year, embarrassingly bad. And I think they go a long way signing Lance Lynn to pair with Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman. And that's a solid three, and they want to compete. I don't think they can, regardless of what they do. I don't think they can compete with the Red Sox and Yankees, but that's what they want to do. So I think that they sign Lynn. I have him at 476. That's somewhere between the Ian Kennedy, Jeff Samardzija deal. Ian Kennedy got 4 years, $70 million with the Royals. Jeff Samardzija got 4 years, $90 million with the Giants. So I think Lance Lynn wasn't as good as people think he was this year, I guess is my reasoning why he doesn't quite get the Jeff Samardzija deal. But he very well could. That's just kind of where I pegged the market for him.
And that's where I have him. I mean, I have a hard time believing he's not going to get Samardzija money. I mean, I, that's why I ask you. I mean, am I overthinking him? I appreciate you saying that, you know, he may not be as good as I think he is. So very interesting to say the least. I like him. Let me move down to a guy that, Wade Davis. I have a hard time believing the Cubs will let him go, because I think their bullpen was, I don't know that their bullpen's that great to begin with. It's a mess if he leaves. Am I wrong there?
No, I totally agree. The caveat to that is, I don't know if you've seen the recent rumors that have started to rumble. We got some hot stove rumors going on that the Giants may be interested in Jason Hayward.
I saw that. So, that was interesting to say the least.
Yeah, so it looks like it could be a major just salary dump trade on both ends, where the Cubs get Jeff Samardzija and Mark Melancon, and the Giants take on Hayward. Now, will that go anywhere? I have no idea. It would certainly throw a monkey wrench into my Wade Davis going to the Cubs situation. But as long as something like that doesn't happen, and obviously a lot of trades and movement will change some of these predictions. But as it stands right now, I don't think they can let Wade Davis go. They have to have a closer. They're going to non-tender Hector Rondon, their former closer, to save some money, and they don't have any options. Strope's not ready. We saw Carl Edwards Jr.'s not ready to take on that role. So I don't think they have a choice but to dump money into Wade Davis.
Moving down then, Greg Holland has really been linked to the Cardinals. I know you're anti-Greg Holland. Exactly why?
Well, a lot of it has to do with his velocity. He just hasn't quite gotten it back. You know, sometimes guys have Tommy John surgery and they throw harder than they did prior to it. He's not one of them. And he faded a bit in August. On the surface, he looks like a good closer. He really does. And he probably would put it a good another year or two together. It's that third, fourth year that I worry, you know, what is he going to be? Is he going to be a Sun 1-0, you know, where you can't trust to put him out there hardly at all? And I think the Rockies have money, not a lot of money, but they have enough money to keep the band back together. You'll notice a common theme with Rockies free agents that I have in this list, Mark Reynolds, Carlos Gonzalez, and Greg Holland, all end up going back to the Rockies. And I think it's because they are familiar with those players, they were successful with those players, and I think they believe that they can compete with those guys, and they just got to the wildcard game with them. So I don't think they have to make a ton of moves. They probably got to do something with some starting pitching. But I think they pony up the money to bring Greg Holland back because he had such good success with them. And I don't think that he opted out of his deal with them because it had anything to do with the Rockies. I think he saw his opportunity to get a longer-term deal than just 1 year. And so that's the only reason he opted out.
I would agree with that. I think that's a big part of it. My thing would be this: if the Rockies have anybody there that has any success, they ought to try to hang on to them because it's just such an odd place to play. So I would agree with that. I'm going to finish up with you with two guys that intrigue me for the Cardinals. Well, actually, I'm going to say three because I can't remember if it was you or somebody else. So let's go with the two that intrigue me, and then I want to bring up a name that I think it might have been you that has thrown around that the Cardinals should seriously consider. So the first guy that intrigues me a little bit is Alex Cobb. Your thoughts on Alex Cobb?
I like Alex Cobb. The thing with that is he's a lot like Lance Lynn. So that's
But apparently you think he's going to be a lot cheaper.
I do, and that's due to his injury history. So Alex Cobb missed almost 2 years due to the line drive to his head, and then he had Tommy John surgery after that. So he has only had 1 year over the last three to really prove what he can do, and I think that's why the discount comes with him. And also, I think he somewhat takes the discount because he goes back with his pitching coach, Jim Hickey, and the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs need starting pitching. They're going to end up with one of those Tampa starters. I don't think they have enough to trade for Archer. I suppose they could trade for Odorizzi if they wanted to, but why not just sign Cobb and not lose any more of their prospects when really Cobb and Odorizzi are virtually the same thing. So I see him going to the Cubs. I don't see the Cardinals spending that kind of money on – if they're going to spend that kind of money, it's going to be on one of the big guys, I think. I don't think they're going to spend that kind of money on a middling starter, you know, a middle-of-the-rotation guy. Because otherwise, why would they have traded Mike Leake, you know?
So you think if they were going to spend that kind of money, they'd go ahead and sign one of the elite closers then and just go with the pitching staff that they have?
I more mean if they're going to spend that kind of money, I think they sign someone like Arrieta or Darvish.
Oh, you know,
I think they're either going to trade for a starter, low-hanging fruit, Jason Vargas type, or they're going to go for all of it, which is the best of the best. I don't think they're going to middle around in that middle tier of starting pitchers. I think that's why they don't have interest in Lance Lynn. I don't think they want that type of pitcher. I think that's why they traded Mike Leake. You know, if they were interested in that kind of player, they would have just kept Mike Leake and not paid Seattle to take him off their hands.
Lastly, on a guy that intrigues me, there's actually two, but the one I'm going to bring up Brian Shaw intrigues me, but Addison Reed intrigues me more. And let me tell you why. Because Addison Reed is a guy that has dominated in the late innings. And then when they put him in closer role, he did good. That's why he intrigues me.
Yeah, I like Addison Reed. I've liked Addison Reed since he played for the White Sox, actually. He throws hard. He gets strikeouts. I think he might price himself because of his age. You know, he's going to go into his age 29 season. I think because of that, he'll price himself a little bit out of the Cardinals' range in terms of the guys I think they're looking at in Morrow and Nicasio and that type of guy. I think he's going to command at least 4, maybe 5 years with an option there because of his age. So that's where you look in, you know, when you're looking at contract precedent and recent signings and that type of thing, age comes into it a lot, and I think you can get a 31-year-old Nicasio for significantly less money than you can get a 29-year-old Madison Reed and get similar production.
I'm okay. If they came to me and said, look, we're going to go with Morrow and Nicasio, I'd be okay. I'd be ecstatic if they said we're going to go with Reed and Nicasio. I would be ecstatic.
Oh, I totally agree. And I would have no issue with those decisions. Derek Gould reported the other day on Twitter that two previous times throughout the last couple years, the Cardinals have had interest in Brandon Morrow. And I think there's smoke there. You know,
sure.
If you've had interest in a guy twice and now he's shown to be a dominant reliever for, a World Series contending team, and you could probably get him at a discount because of his age, there's some smoke there. With the amount of arms the Cardinals need, they got to sign two guys at least. You have to replace Rosenthal and you have to replace O. So I just think he ends up being one of those guys.
Okay, this is the name, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's you. Are you the person that I've seen saying that a name the Cardinals should really look at is Tyler Chatwood?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell me why. I love Tyler Chatwood.
Okay.
Tyler Chatwood is a ground ball pitcher, much like Mike Leake, only better, in my opinion. He throws a little harder. He gets a lot of ground balls. When he pitches outside of Coors Field, he is very good. He got a 3.31 ERA outside of Coors Field in his career, and that's over 300-plus inning sample size. So we're not talking a year or two. Tyler Chatwood was traded from the Angels for Chris Iannetta back in 2011. It's the worst thing that could have happened to him, unfortunately. He was traded from the Angels to the Rockies, and his ERA is over 5 at Coors Field, which a lot of ground ball pitchers struggle at Coors Field. And it sounds odd. Ground ball pitchers struggle against fly ball hitters. And when guys are in tours, they're trying to hit fly balls. They're trying to get that ball to carry, and not necessarily just for home runs. You can get a lot of doubles and triples at Coors Field because of the spacious outfield. So they're trying to lift the ball when they're at Coors. So ground ball pitchers struggle at Coors Field. Tyler Chatwood is going to come at a significant discount because of this. He's only 28 years old. So it would almost be just like a Mike Leake deal, only I think he's better than Mike Leake. I don't know that the Cardinals go there because, like I said, I don't know if they're going to spend that kind of money for the stopgap type pitcher that they need. But I would totally welcome it. I just don't know if they will.
Well, those are the guys that I find it. You've got some other guys on here that, again, I think are interesting. We didn't talk about, and I guess we can before we go, the two. Yeah, we have to, because I want to tease something here. So, number one, J.D. Martinez has been linked to the Cardinals in one way, shape, or form with different scenarios. Obviously, I know for a fact you're not the biggest Eric Hosmer fan. Tell our listeners why, very quickly, why Hosmer is, in your opinion, no better than Matt Carpenter.
Okay, so the first question I'll have for you before we even start is, where are you putting Matt Carpenter if you sign Eric Hosmer?
Well, I would assume that means we're moving Matt Carpenter, but that's just me.
Okay. All right. That's a solution, I suppose. You know, but that's the question I ask everyone that wants Eric Hosmer signed. You know, when you already have a first baseman who did a good job, I know a lot of people don't think so, but he did. He did a good job.
Well, tell me how. Tell me how he did a good job, because I watched him miss throws at first base. So please tell me how he did a good job.
According to defensive run saved, he was a plus defender at first base. And I know that a lot of people are suspect to that, but Eric Hosmer was a minus -7 defensive run saved at first base, and he won a gold glove last night. So I don't know. I don't get it. Carlos Santana was a plus +10. Mitch Moreland was a plus +10. Neither one of them won a gold glove. So I don't know how Eric Hosmer won a gold glove last night. He hasn't been good the last 2 years at first base. His UZR ratings have gone down. He hasn't had the same range. So when you look at that, on top of what type of hitter Matt Carpenter is, he's just an overall, he gets on base more than Eric Hosmer. I think they have similar power. They're very, very similar players. So I go, what I don't understand is the fascination with a Matt Carpenter type player that's going to get $160 million. You know, I have him at 7 years, $161 million. You want to spend 20 some odd million dollars a year on another version of Matt Carpenter?
I could go, listen, I'm of this belief, and I've looked at it, and here's the issue. I think it's all about which Eric Hosmer do you get. I mean, that's my thing. I think some years he's much better than Carpenter, and in other years he's not. I think that ultimately is my biggest problem.
And that's the biggest problem. You look at Matt Carpenter, he doesn't have those peaks and valleys. Yes, he has years that are down compared to others. But when you go from an OPS plus of 130 down to 120, that's a lot different than going from 107 to 135, you know, and that's the type of thing that Eric Hosmer does. Eric Hosmer also hits a lot of ground balls, and that can get you in trouble when you don't have a lot of speed. So, I understand people think Eric Hosmer is good, and I think he is a good player. He is a good player. He's not a great player. He's not a player I'd pay $160 million to, and that's low end. I mean, his agent is looking for $200 million, which I don't think he ends up getting. All summer, I thought he'd get somewhere around 8 years, $200 million because of his age. But when you look at the market for first baseman, there's no reason for a team to pay that this year. So Eric Hosmer will not sign until late February because that's what his agent does. He's going to hold out. All the other first basemen are going to sign first. And it's going to be somewhere 7 years, $161 million, and he's not going to get the $200 million. If he was in the 2018 free agent class, maybe, because that one's going to be insane in terms of the money being spent. But this year, I just don't see teams doing it. They just have no reason to do it.
Interesting. And again, I only ask because, you know, I know Benji's a big fan, and I like the guy. I I more just like him. Like I've watched him play a lot. I think I really got a lot of insight into him on Team USA. I think we could use a player like that. Now, is it worth the money? I could sit here all day long and go back and forth on that, because you also know, you've heard me say it here a number of times, I'm not making excuses for an organization that has plenty of money. So I'm just not going to do that. So, again, at the end of the day, I just want us to be better. I like Hosmer. If they signed him, I wouldn't be upset. But this is the type of thing that I want to get smarter about. If you tell me that he's really no better than what we have, and these are the numbers why, and I can honestly look at it and say, okay, I think he's on to something here. I'm good. So that sounds good to me. The other guy, last, and we'll finish with this guy, J.D. Martinez. A lot of people like him. They think he's been linked to the Cardinals. Somebody had the Cardinals, John Heyman or somebody. All Cardinals are going to go hard after Martinez. Hard, you know, that's why I love the media too, by the way. Wasn't it about 3 days after whoever that was said the Cardinals were going to go hard after Martinez, Mozeliak did an interview and said, I think you can expect our big bat to come via trade. That's why people think these media guys know so much. And while I understand they have a pulse, these organizations use these media guys as much as they do anything. So they and I think the media guys know it.
Especially the national guys, you know, the Nightingales and the Haymans and stuff like that. I just want to touch on one more thing with the Hosmer Carpenter situation.
Sure.
I will give you one reason why I would prefer, this is one reason why I would prefer Hosmer over Carpenter. And that is that Hosmer has been established in the middle of the order and doesn't require to bat leadoff to be successful. Now, Carpenter can say all he wants that he doesn't have to bat leadoff to be successful. The numbers say otherwise.
Sure.
And it's a sample size enough to say something's in his head that doesn't have him batting leadoff. So I think he does kind of clog up stuff when he's having to bat leadoff. So that's why this summer I wanted the Cardinals to trade for Brandon Belt of the Giants, because I think he's just like Matt Carpenter. He's just like Eric Hosmer. They're all three of the same mold. The difference is Belt and Hosmer can bat third. They can bat fourth. They don't have to bat leadoff to be successful. And that gives guys like Dexter Fowler and Tommy Pham and Colton Wong, the guys you want to have at the top of your lineup, an opportunity to be up there and make your offense that much better. So that is one reason why I would be okay with Hosmer. But there's a lot of stuff going against it as well.
And that's a big part of it for me too. And again, I think he's a fiery type player. I like that. I mean, again, people can say, well, you're over analyzing that. I'm not, because that's the, you know, I think, again, the Cardinals need some of that. You can think whatever you want to think, but that's what I believe. They need some of that. So, again, let's finish up with J.D. Martinez, mainly because he's been linked to the Cardinals. I mean, again, I think we just said that it doesn't take much to link somebody to somebody, but a lot of Cardinal fans are interested in J.D. Martinez. They felt like this was the kind of guy that if Mo would have went and got it, may have changed our season, because he wound up going to Arizona and having a nice impact. I think he's been a guy that has been better than most people would give him credit for the last couple of years. I know there's been a little bit of an injury thing there, but tell us a little bit about J.D. Martinez.
So I have J.D. Martinez going to the Giants, 6 years, $156 million. The reason I'm going to the Giants is because I don't think they get Stanton. So when they lose out on Stanton, I think they turn their attention to J.D. Martinez. They need a power bat. They need someone to protect Posey or vice versa. And right now they lack that bat. They finished last in the National League in slugging percentage. There's just no punch. There's nothing to fear. People say there's nothing to fear in the Cardinals lineup. The Giants are running out of double-A lineup. So they need a guy like J.D. Martinez. And when they miss out on Stanton, I think they attack. They're not going to rebuild, even though they need to. They need to rebuild. They need to trade, you know, Posey. They need to trade Bumgarner. They need to trade Samardzija and really replenish their farm system, just like the Chicago White Sox, but they won't do it. They're going to throw money at whatever they can to try and fix it. I don't know that it will, but I believe J.D. Martinez ends up with the Giants once they realize they can't get Stanton. And the reason I don't have him going back to the Diamondbacks is they're going to be in some financial trouble here soon. They owe Zach Greinke $37 million a year for the next 4 years. They're going to have to pay Paul Goldschmidt here after the 2019 season. So that's going to cost, I can't even imagine right now. I'd have to look at it, how much that's going to cost them. So I don't think Arizona can afford to bring him back on the type of contract that he's going to get. And I don't think the Giants care too much about how much money they spend. They've made it really clear with their signings of Samardzija and Cueto and Melanson. I mean, they'll throw money at it. So I think once they miss out on Stanton, J.D. Martinez ends up with the Giants. The problem there is, you know, people say that he's never been the guy. In Detroit, he had Miguel Cabrera. In Arizona, he had Paul Goldschmidt. But you could argue that he has Buster Posey with the Giants. Now, Buster Posey is not on the same level as those other two, but at least he has some sort of protection, something that will help him get pitches thrown his way. So that's where I view J.D. Martinez at this time.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you because I just – I'm never going to say never, but if you look at this stuff, if everybody's being equal here, they don't have the prospects to get Stanton. And again, I would say it'd be one thing if they were the only ones that wanted Stanton. It'd be different because, you know, then Miami would have to say, okay, we need to cut ties. They're willing to take on the money, and they're going to give us these. Well, then that's the only people willing to take him. But that's not the case. And let me say this. That shouldn't be the case. The Cardinals should make it so that this is a non-issue. It should be a non-issue. So
yeah, they need to flex. You know, you talk about their dry powder and flexing payroll muscle. They need to push the Marlins against the wall and get Giancarlo Stanton in St. Louis. That's what needs to happen. Don't come in second to the Dodgers. Don't come in second to the Giants. Do what you have to do to get this done, and let the other teams scramble and figure out what their secondary plans are, like J.D. Martinez.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm interested. I had told you originally what my plan was and what I wanted to do was I wanted to have you as a recurring guest, and I wanted to track these top 50 and see how you did. And that has kind of morphed into you and I having a conversation off the air, and I think we can feel comfortable in telling people. And the reason I'm doing this is because I've had numerous people reach out and say, hey, you know, not looking for an argument here, but I really, really think you guys should embrace the analytic part of this a little bit more. At least get educated with it, so to speak. And I have dedicated myself to try to do that. So I don't know. I think we can let people know that starting next week, we're going to hear from you every Thursday here on Two Birds on a Bat with a new segment. And I think we can tell them the name of it. I think it's a pretty clever name. Bow Ties and Sweaters with @ Mo's Algorithm, where analytics meet the eye test. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of it. I really appreciate the opportunity. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think what we're hoping to do here, just for our listeners that are listening in, we've talked a little bit. I think Mo's Algorithm here is going to provide us with insight into certain players. But also something he's going to do is he's going to tell us a little bit about these analytics. So maybe each week we'll pick one. And he can tell us how it's derived, what it tells you. And what I'm really looking for here, and this is why I think you were the right guy for this gig, is I want to know the pros and cons of the stat. Does that make sense? And that was really what I want to bring to it, because I don't think anything's 100%, so to speak. So I want to know, here's what this stat tells you. Here's why it's a good stat. If you wanted to kind of look at it like, here's the problem with the stat, here's what you could look at. So I want all things to be equal, and I think you provide that because I do. I find you to be an extremely level-headed analytics guy.
Yeah, and I will be prepared and have this stuff ready for you. It should be a lot of fun to go back and forth on.
Well, I'm excited about the segment. I think it's going to be fun. I know Benji and Steve and I, we're all looking forward to it. I think it's going to provide us with more topic of conversation and a place for us to see a little bit about what's going on. And then really it should provide a lot of back and forth, because I know for a fact, like I said, I don't think you're ever going to get the three guys in this room to 100% say, if the numbers say so, do it every time. I mean, I've gone to the other extreme of the argument before. I had told somebody, like, in a game at the end of the season, they were talking about numbers, and I said, well, there was a Cardinal game where Nicasio saved it against the Cubs. And I said, okay, so did you want Matheny to come out and get him when Baez was batting? Because Baez is hitting like 800 off him. I said, is that how extreme you want to go with the numbers? Because he got two strikeouts that inning against two guys that knocked the shit out of him. One of them was Baez, and I can't remember who the other hitter was. I said, but so that's what you want to do?
Well, that goes into a fun argument about BVP, batter versus pitcher. That's something that we could get into in another segment. But yeah, there's a lot of data behind the fact that that 800 batting average against Nicasio didn't really mean a whole lot. So that's a whole other can of worms we can open.
See, but, and yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, here it is. You want to throw numbers at me, and then I give you a number. And then now you're going to tell me how that number, because it doesn't fit your narrative, doesn't really mean anything. See, that's my problem with analytics. So, but hey, I'm open-minded. I'm open-minded. Let's get smarter. You know, I love semi-pro. And we're, you know, let's get tropical. Let's get smarter. How about that?
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'll learn a few things from you guys, too, about the perspective on the game and that stuff that goes through the minds of players. And I think we can meet up somewhere with it.
Well, let's be honest. You're gonna if that's what you're looking to get a little smarter, you're gonna get that from Benji. You're not gonna get it from me and Steve. I mean, let's face it. We're just a couple of knucklehead fans. And you know, I try to keep it light, and I tell people all the time, just relax. Okay, you don't know any more than any of us, okay? Just relax. Okay, there's all kinds of stuff, I promise you, going on that none of us know anything about. Just relax.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about the analytics is the stuff that's even available to us is elementary compared to the stuff that front offices use. So even the stuff we can see is not even close to the data that they have in major league front offices.
Yeah, and again, I was going to tell you, and I'll leave with this. As far as the numbers and the analytics go, I heard an interview the other day with Dave Duncan. Because I had a guy that tweet, and he likes to, and I don't really have a problem with him. He's always tweeting at us about how we hate analytics, and he says, "I'll bet you guys just hate Mike Maddox hiring." And I tweeted back at him, never heard from him again. I said, I hate the Mike Maddox hiring probably about as much as you hated Dave Duncan when he was here. And he didn't have a response, because the problem is Dave Duncan – I mean, did you ever notice the book he kept in the dugout? It was massive.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But yet, if you listen to him talk, he'll say, look, I think you can use analytics to train people, but there's a lot more human element that goes into this during a game.
Sure.
But you know what I'm saying? I use this all the time. We watch Justin Verlander dominate in the postseason, throwing 97-mile-an-hour strikes where? Up in the zone. Why? Because his spin rate is outrageous, right? Well, guess who had an outrageous spin rate and did nothing but get outs up in the zone, but Dave Duncan told him, you can't pitch that way. And that was Anthony Reyes. Remember Anthony Reyes?
Yeah.
For anybody that was in St. Louis at that time, Dave Duncan would get in the newspaper and say, he can't pitch up in the zone like that. Well, guess what? He could. But Dave Duncan didn't know anything about spin rate. All he knew was, 99% of the time when I have guys that buy in and pitch down on the zone, they seem to have good success. So guess what we're going to do? We're going to make this guy a robot. We want him to pitch down on the zone like everybody else.
Yep, not everybody can pitch that way.
But guess what? Dave Duncan had a lot of success, and everybody loved him here. So my point is, can you have your cake and eat it too? You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I'm in that boat. I am 100% on board with analytics helping you get better. 100%, no doubt. It can help you train. But I say this all the time. It's like the Ted Williams hitting chart. Everybody in the world knew if you pitched him low and outside, he didn't hit as well as he did if you pitched him anywhere else. Then why didn't everybody just pitch him low and outside? It's just not that easy. It's just not that easy. It's a battle within a battle.
You still have to execute. You still have to do proper fundamentals and mechanics. So, and I've said that to people on Twitter that are old school. You know, I'll say analytics don't mean anything if you can't field a ground ball.
Yep.
So, you know, if you don't have the simple mechanics and fundamentals, then the analytics can really just go out the window because it's not going to help you.
Well, there's a lot to it, and I do want to learn from it. I'm excited about our new segment. Like I said, it's going to start next week. I hope you have as much fun with it as we're going to have from it. For the listeners, I hope you enjoyed it as well. I know you have a nice following on social media. I know you get really engaged. I know you'll promote it. Something else we're going to do is you're going to start a new Facebook group. called Mo's Algorithm that'll give people an opportunity on Facebook to be part of the conversation and discussion as well. I think that's a great idea. I love the whole Mo's Algorithm thing too, by the way, and it was easy play on words for us to do a segment with you. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are as well. I hope your followers enjoy it, and I hope our listeners are happy that we're eager to accept and embrace that there is another part of this game that we need to learn a little bit about. You're going to bring some levity to that as well, and again, it should make for a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, I thank you for doing this episode today. Like I said, I'm going to be interested to track your list. I'm curious. If I had to put you on the spot right now before we go, how do you think you'll do on this? I mean, do you think you'll look back on this and think you did pretty well, or is it such a hard thing to do that that's kind of a failing at this as a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Well, I mean, there's so many variables that go into it that I don't really have control over, like trades, releases, stuff like that, and it's my first crack at it. If I were to get, say, 20% of them right, I would be ecstatic.
Okay.
Because I think that's how difficult it is to peg this.
Yeah, I was curious about that as well.
If I got 10 of them right, that would be pretty cool.
Yep. I will tell you that there's two other names on here that I didn't get to that maybe you can have ready for me next week that intrigue me for the Cardinals, and that's Tony Watson and Jake McGee. So,
okay,
anyway,
sure.
Just a couple of names that, because while I want Stanton, if you just went and got him, no good.
No.
But that's what I don't think people understand. The beautiful thing here about the Stanton thing, and I'm going to end with this, the beautiful thing about the Stanton thing is, there is no way, in my opinion, on God's earth, that they could go get Stanton. They could go get Stanton and Mike Trout tomorrow, and they still have to address the bullpen, because there is no way they could go into next year with what they have. It's impossible, in my opinion. That's what makes this beautiful.
I totally agree. And the thing is I think their focus is on Stanton now, because there's one Stanton and about 10 guys in the free agency that they can fit in the bullpen and make it work.
That's why I'm excited.
He can say 1A all he wants. I think Stanton's the priority right now, because there's multiple guys that they can go sign to put in the bullpen and make it work.
Lastly, I'm going to leave you with this question. What excites me is I think this Stanton thing happens quick. Thoughts?
Yes.
I think this Stanton thing happens quickly because of the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, GM meetings next week.
Yeah, I think this thing happens quickly. I keep saying last question. I saw something the other day that I firmly believe. I think the Marlins have already went to him and said, listen, if it's the Cardinals, are you okay with it? I believe they have. Because I think we're too – there is a ton of smoke here. There is no way they haven't asked him, look, if we do all this work, are you just going to shoot it down? What do you think?
Yeah, so when he was on Jimmy Kimmel a few weeks ago, he said he was going to have a meeting with Jeter and the ownership group once the World Series was over. So he's had that meeting now. It had to have come up in that meeting. It was discussed in the open, I'm sure. I think he has an idea of where he's headed. I think the Cardinals and Marlins are just nailing down the final pieces. John Mozeliak got Jason Hayward at the GM meetings 2 years ago, and it shocked everybody. Nobody expected that to happen. It happened at the GM meetings, and I think that's where it happens again this year.
Well, I'm excited. Like I said, my guess would be, and again, this is purely a guess, unless you're a fly in the room, I would bet that Jeter and them said, look, we will absolutely entertain offers from these other places that you would prefer to be. But at the end of the day, we just bought this club. We have to look at this thing. The Cardinals are hot. Are you okay with it, or are we wasting our time? So, again, there is no way, in my opinion, that all this is getting leaked if it isn't a realistic possibility. There's a big difference between rumors and what's going on here, in my opinion.
Yep, I totally agree. And as crazy as it sounds, I would not be – I can't say I wouldn't be shocked, because it would be just fascinating. If Yelich came with him, that would be one of the most unbelievable trades I've ever seen.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. And like I said, I always look at who's talking about these trades. And while I'm not a big fan of his, Peter Gammons getting in on this tells me that it's real.
Yeah, and that was it for me too. That's the day. When Peter Gammons reported that the Cardinals have offered a top pitching prospect, and reported it, didn't rumor it, did nothing, didn't say unnamed sources. He said it happened. He talked to someone that it happened. I believe in. Peter Gavins is a he would be a reputable name that I would believe in. He's
well,
not a Bob Nightingale or whoever, but he's a guy I believe in, and it's happening.
Well, and here's why. Here's why. Let me give you my real quick conspiracy theory. It's because who does Peter Gammons love? Boston Red Sox. Who has been rumored to be in love with Stanton? Boston Red Sox. You know, Miami went back to Boston and said, look, I mean, what you're offering is not even close. The Cardinals have offered a top pitching prospect. And I guarantee you, the Boston guy had to go to Peter Gammons and say, look, he's got to let his fans know why he's not going to wind up getting him. Look, I mean, the Cardinals have offered a top pitching prospect. We don't have anything like that to offer.
Yep, I would agree.
So, again, I know it's real easy to dismiss, but I'm adding up all these things, and that's why I think it's real. And listen, I have dismissed them spending money. I have said they won't do that. I've done it a million times. This feels different to me. And again, maybe I'm going to be massively disappointed in a couple weeks, and I might be. But this feels like it's going to happen to me. It really does. It's got the same feeling to me as the Matt Holliday thing. The same.
And I've been this confident in a Cardinals move twice in the last year. The first one, I said last fall during the playoffs that the Cardinals would sign Dexter Fowler to be their center fielder. I was adamant about it. I would have put any amount of money on it. It happened. All summer long. All spring, summer, whatever, I said Lance Lynn is not getting traded. They will not trade Lance Lynn. They didn't trade Lance Lynn. So twice, now I'm not saying I know all and everything, but twice I've been this confident, I've felt this strongly about something to go and say it publicly, those two things would happen. This is how I feel about Stanton.
Well, this feels like the Holliday thing to me when it happened, because I remember thinking, man, are we really going to get Matt Holliday? Are we really? Because, you know, and it just felt that way to me. But we'll see. And like I said, I could be completely wrong. But, hey, I really enjoyed this today. I hope you did as well. And I'm really looking forward to having you as a member of our show on Thursdays. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Jim. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, hey, guys, that'll do it for us today. And, again, that is Mo's Algorithm. I'm your host here at Two Birds on a Bat, Jim Cromer. I want to remind you one last time to check us out at twobirdsonabat.com. It's where you can listen to the show. It's also where you can subscribe. Don't forget us there. Follow us on our social media outlets. Very simple to do, at Birds on a Bat Show. Hit us up on Facebook by typing in Two Birds on a Bat, or go to our group, Birds on a Bat. Find us on Instagram as well. Two Birds on a Bat Show. Thanks again to all of our partners out there. For all of you that have not signed up to be a member of the Rally Squirrel Club, we want to encourage you to do so. Don't forget, that's real easy to do, rallysquirrel.com. That is the wonderful club that we're happy to be associated with when it comes to the rallysquirrel.com Facebook page. You get that premium content on Mondays along with all the wonderful prizes provided by Fan Cave Sports. It's cheaper than the price of a cup of coffee. My next move is to get Mo's Algorithm on that show so that he can educate those listeners, as they've asked for a little 101 in sabermetrics. So I'm gonna be leaning on him to do that for us as well. That should be exciting. But again, special thanks to everybody and all they do here, the wonderful Facebook groups, Cardinals Nation, Cardinals 24/7, St. Louis Cardinals Fans Unite, Arch City Sports. I know I'm forgetting some, but man, they are the greatest community, and I'm so happy and proud to be a part of everything all those guys are doing. For my co-hosts who aren't with me today, Benji Molina and Steve Flowers, I'm Jim Cromer. This is Two Birds on a Bat. Let's go, Birds.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.